Well, most respected ambassadors and ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to be here among such an august gathering, and I really look forward to the question and answer session. And I'm supposed to speak on a very important subject, a subject which has been bothering Pakistan for the last, ever since its inception, and continues to face and continues to remain the most formidable challenge for Pakistan. And I must give credit to the Institute of Policy Research who have chosen this important and relevant subject that has a bearing on our everyday life as much as the long-term safety and stability of the country. I think it's important that I slightly reflect back and go into the history of Pakistan. I know most of you are so well aware, but just to place in context what is happening today, it is important that we have a historical context to the happenings in Pakistan of today. You see, ever since the creation of Pakistan, it has been facing existential challenges that affect the safety, the security, and the stability of the country. Regrettably, it continues to face similar challenges even today. There are, of course, historical factors of which we are fully aware, the internal weaknesses and contradictions that are there in the society and in politics and in our economy, and the external environment that have contributed towards this situation. The external environment, both regional as well as global, as well as internal. I will dilate on these very briefly. I think, you know, because as I've often said, that I'm much older than Pakistan, so I really know exactly how chaotic were the conditions when Pakistan was created or was born. You cannot imagine the conditions that existed at that time, and of course some of which continue till to date. In a way, we were, even at that point of time, there were millions of refugees, of course, moving to Pakistan from India in a very pitiable conditions. There was a continuous, you know, in a way, there were hardly any places where they could go to. Millions of people had been displaced. All this had to be sort of, they had to be resettled. Then, leaving aside that, the hostility with India was as strong and even worse than what it is today, in the sense that there was always a feeling at the time of partition, for many years in fact, that India was bent upon, at least that was the feeling that was created. To some extent it was true, to some extent it was magnified, that you know, India was not interested in ensuring that Pakistan would last for very long. So I think we were born under those conditions. Then I think sometimes we tend to forget that what is important is that most of our institutions were very weak. And the only institution that was really, in relative terms, strong was the military and the civil society, the civil service. Apart from that, you know, the political parties were extremely weak. In fact, the political parties were non-existent, I would say, in Pakistan, because the ones which were, to some extent, had, you know, some following, that was more or less, they were elitist parties, like the United Party in Punjab, and the Muslim League, in fact, had more roots in the part which was today in India, and hardly had any roots in Pakistan. It was, of course, a very strong movement, Muslim League. So I think the point I'm trying to make is that Pakistan started from a very weak political platform, you know, it did not have strong political parties. Its political parties were weak. There were hardly any democratic institutions. In fact, Baluchistan was not even a province at that point of time. So you can imagine that the journey that we have traveled should also is quite commendable in that sense, that we started off from practically scratch. Then dynastic politics, which still you find very much in vogue, was so much there that you cannot imagine all parties. The Muslim League was full of elite which had dynastic connections and hardly had any roots with the people. So the thinking, the policies, and all at the beginning were very elitist, which continue, of course, to a very large extent even till today. But you have to understand that what is the reason for a very major weakness. And there were parties which were opposed to the idea, as I said, the Unionist Party, even the Jamaat-e-Islami was opposed to the creation of Pakistan. So when Balochistan was not even a province, and today if there is trouble, you can understand that why is it that we don't have these problems, because we haven't gone the way that it should have been to strengthen especially those provinces which have been initially at a very weak stage. And Fatah, of course, continues to be a victim that we have not been able to really settle as to what sort of reforms we should have for Fatah even after 70 years. In this context, we have such a hostile, extremely hostile neighborhood. India, Afghanistan, and our relations with Iran today lack the confidence level. Border incident and proxies are facing regional and they are feeding regional and sectarian differences, and they cast a deep shadow on our relations and have a very adverse impact on Pakistan's political as well as economic development. I think the real question now is, what should be Pakistan's long-term security paradigm? I think this is the crux of it. And if we are able to resolve and find a real solution as to what should be the long-term security paradigm, I think we, to a large extent, we'd be successful in overcoming the great challenges that we face today. I think a security paradigm that takes care of the economic prosperity and well-being of the people, as was mentioned by our eminent first speaker, this would require, of course, a lot of hard work and an understanding as to how economic development should take place. The CPEC is there, it would help, but essentially I think we need some very major economic and political reforms to ensure the continuity and well-being of the people. But what I'm going to concentrate is that I think we also need definitely a certain level of normalization of relations with India, and clearly improved relations and a greater level of confidence between Afghanistan and Pakistan. I think this is very central. Now, whereas it is extremely important to have, I think, for the well-being of the people of Pakistan and also of India and also of this region, the problem is, and the greatest challenge is, how to achieve it. It is all very easy to say that we should have. We have been trying it, but we have not succeeded it. And is it possible that under the present circumstances, when the relations are as bad as they are today, is it really possible to change the paradigm and to have a relationship which at least works towards a certain level of normality? I think it is possible, but it's a great challenge. Now, we have to really rethink of our policies. Firstly, as far as what can Pakistan do, then I'll come to what can India do, or at least should try to do, even if it cannot achieve today. It could perhaps achieve tomorrow or the day after. Firstly, I think we have to stop the use of non-state actors. It's a very major decision. I don't think it's all that easy, but I think it is a must. If you want to restore the level of confidence of the international community, if you have to restore the confidence of India and Afghanistan, and also prevent them from using non-state actors against us, it is very important to ensure that non-state actors are not used against any, you know, the neighbors. But in order to know, you know, it is easy to say that, but some of the non-state actors today have become very important. Is it really feasible for Pakistan to really control them? I think to a large extent it is, and it would be much easier if we take the people of Pakistan into confidence. If we take the parliament into confidence, I think it would be much easier to control. And we also have to take these very organizations into confidence, especially the ones which have still good relations with our security establishment, that it is in the larger interest, it is also in their interest that, you know, they come under state control completely. Because we do not want India to give excuses for behaving the way that it behaves. You know, its hegemonic tendencies, its attitude towards us is amplified as a consequence of this great weakness of ours. We cannot allow that to happen anymore. And I think Pakistan should have, the state of Pakistan, the institutions of Pakistan should have enough confidence in themselves so that they don't have to rely on non-state actors. Because the moment you start relying on non-state actors, you lose control over policy. And then you allow others also to use non-state actors. So I think there was a certain period of time when we perhaps needed that in order to countervail India's designs and you know the quest for getting Kashmir. But as we are aware, that I don't think this policy has worked, and it's not going to work in the future. Neither is it working in the present. So I think we definitely have to do that. Then I think we need the civilian control over our foreign policy. It's not that the army must not give its input. Its input is extremely crucial and important because of the security situation in Pakistan and the type of borders that we have. But at the same time, I think it does not justify anymore. If you are going to be a mature democracy, if you are going to move towards better relations with your neighbors, it's extremely important that the civilian government takes control over, you know, foreign policy. Now, that will only happen. This, again, will be only a wish list. This will only happen if the civilian government's performance improves to a point where there is sufficient confidence within the civilian government and the people place confidence in the civilian government so that they can really, you know, take control over foreign and security policy. And I think the other simultaneous and parallel action that they should take is that they should use institutions, because if they use institutions, gradually their grasp and their control over foreign and defense policy will improve. If they don't use institutions and leave it to the civilian, to the military, then obviously you will have no control over defense policy. So I think that's an extremely important aspect. And I think there is also a full realization on the part of the military leadership that how important it is that the civilian leadership also plays its role, because the type of statements that are coming out and the very good, great statement that came out from the chief yesterday or day before regarding as to how the you know, the fight against the militants cannot possibly be achieved without full cooperation of the civilians. So I think all these things move, us in a direction where there is a definite need for the Prime Minister to sort of really take control, have a foreign minister as well. Well, I don't want to get into that because, you know, that's quite a controversial thing. But the fact remains that it's not just that Sartaj Aziz Saab is a most able sort of a person, and I don't see any reason why he shouldn't have been made the foreign minister. But anyway, we need some sort of a full sort of a focus on foreign affairs so that we don't give an opportunity to others to sort of take away the right of the civilian government to take control of the foreign policy. Now, as far as Kashmir is concerned, I think for the time being, our focus should be on two things, because I don't see any movement on Kashmir. One is a certain level of autonomy has to be given by India. The type of conditions that prevail today, the movement in Kashmir is such that it is unsustainable for India to sort of continue with a situation like that. And it's not Pakistan, it is the people of Kashmir which have risen, and risen to an extent that India will not be able to hold, and how long can it continue if it poses to be a democracy and a genuine democracy? It's a really flouting democracy, and it's such a bad, gives such a bad name to India. Then I think the execution of the National Action Plan has to be much, much better than what it is today. I think there are only one or two or three points which are being given the importance. The rest, I think the government has been very inactive and shown a very lack of interest in the National Action Plan, and it's extremely important for the future security of Pakistan. Then greater involvement of the civil society is also essential for the well-being of Pakistan. And I noticed that the civil society, although in certain areas seems active, but not the way that you find, for instance, in Sri Lanka or in India, I think we need much more of activation of the civil society. Then, as I said earlier, the civil-military coordination is central to Pakistan's progress and stability, and also also necessary if you don't want the foreigners to exploit you. Because what we see is that the foreign governments like America, like India, like Afghanistan, like even Iran and others, they want to run parallel lines to the military and to the civil. And they may be talking something different to the civil too, and then to the military, or they have themselves bifurcated the responsibility as to what exactly, what areas they would talk to them and what areas they would talk to the military. And this does not, is not helpful for the country. And I would say that this is one of the very important aspects that we have to take care of. Then I think we need to understand the linkages, which we do to a large extent, but much more the linkages between the internal and the external security. Because if the external situation is good, if we are able to bring peace on our borders, then you will see that the internal security will also be, have a transformational effect internally. And then improved border management, I think that's very important. Pakistan has taken some important steps, like fencing at critical places, but a greater coordination between Pakistan and Afghanistan is necessary. At this stage, the level of confidence is so low that Afghanistan doesn't seem to cooperate with Pakistan, although I think it is in really both short and long-term interest of Afghanistan, irrespective of what it thinks about the finalization of the borders, that it should cooperate as far as border management is concerned. I think it would be very unwise on the part of the Afghan leadership to continue to sort of resist, a better and a coordinated border management between the two countries. And I think one or two more points, and I'll end there. One is, I think it's extremely important to reduce the economic dependence of Pakistan. You cannot continue as a state of 200 million people to be dependent on others. I think it's time that we became economically independent. And for that, of course, you need such policies. You need, of course, your tax reforms, not only reforms, but implementation of ensuring that there is a proper tax collection, and also pursuing policies which make Pakistan independent, because the time is gone when we can continue to lean on others. And if we really are not economically independent, we cannot possibly have an independent foreign policy or an independent security policy. So, and then these contradictions will remain to a point where Pakistan can never progress. You have an economic situation where you are dependent, and you are trying to pursue independent foreign policy, and there is always a contradiction, and you are finding that you are being pulled from all sides, so that you can't even pursue the foreign policy that you are making. And then the foreign policy that you have is also divided between the civil and the military. So I think all these contradictions to me are can be removed, because after all the people of Pakistan have that capacity, both in terms of their talent, education. Of course we need much more, but that can only happen if the leadership takes the lead. If the leadership thinks it's convenient and easy to really rely on others for foreign assistance and not really play that role of leading a country which is economically independent, I think shame be on them. Then, I think lastly I'll say that Pakistan's geostrategic significance has throughout its 70 years of existence has been accepted by all strategic planners in the world, including the US. Originally in relation to the Cold War containment strategy in the 80s, and as a springboard for US strategy to confront the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, and then subsequently, to confront the Soviet occupation, and then presently in the global war on terrorism. Pakistan's geostrategic significance appeals to strategic planners all over the world, but only its value as a rental state, and we have to sort of change that, as I said earlier, and we have to use the strategic importance of ours to transform Pakistan from within and not be influenced from outside. Thank you very much.